Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Alrighty, welcome to the Celtics Lab Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Tabatabai. I'm joined by Dr. Justin Quinn. In the second half of today's episode, we're going to talk to Sean Devaney. I'm saying that right, of heavy.com, and he's going to talk to us about the early goings on what is yet a quiet trade market in the NBA, but any moment could really blossom, and we'll talk to him about what that means for the Celtics. That's in the second half of the show and this lab portion of the programming. Instead, Justin and I, to start, we'll talk about the news of the week. Dr. Quinn, how are you?
Well, the lovely seasonal allergies I have here in Mexico City are about to kick in, so that's been fun. But other than that, great. Yourself?
We give the best updates. Dr. Quinn is burying the lead because I'm sure the allergies suck, but you've been really covering the Mexico City Capitanes very closely. For anyone who's interested, do you want to just like give us a 30-second elevator pitch on what that means?
Well, once upon a time, there was a bunch of fanfare for having any NBA games of any kind outside the borders of the United States in Canada. And this is really the equivalent of that for Mexico. It is, apart from the Mexico City games, which is the most frequent extra national, extra, I guess you could say, Canada also, games in the NBA repertoire. It's the first actual regular season based in Mexico team, which Mark Spears of, I think it's called Anscape now?
Anscape, yeah.
Yeah. Did a recent interview with several people around the league who finally, I could not get this out of them, but he managed to, so props to him. They finally admitted that they're using the Capitanes as kind of a test run to see what happens if we were to have an NBA team here.
Yeah, Mexico City is the largest city in North America, I think, if I'm right about that. So, you know, not insignificant market down there. Yeah, very cool. If you are interested in learning more about that, follow Justin as he continues to, you know, follow the Capitanes. But also, somewhere in our archives, we have a mock expansion draft. So if that really grabs your goat, go find it. Anyways, the Celtics news. The most recent time we've seen the Celtics hit the floor, by the time people listen to this, the Nuggets game will have happened. I'm just going to say the Celtics will win that game 125-120. What about you, Justin?
It's either going to be, I'm kind of leaning towards a blowout one way or another, and it all depends on whether or not the Celtics perimeter defense shows up. I kind of think this is an opportunity for Grant to show that he should stay in the lineup. He may not be shooting as much, but if he does, it'll be for that.
Sure. It's worth noting that Thursday night, the Celtics, Marcus Smart's annual Young Game Changer Foundation bowling extravaganza. Bowling is a tiring sport, so maybe the Celtics would be a little tired. Anyways.
I mean, it ended, I can't remember his name. He went from the Lakers to the 76ers, and he went bowling and supposedly ruined his leg. But anyway, neither here nor there.
Whoa, really? Anyways, what do you think of the Celtics so far? We don't need to get in the weeds of the Pistons game. I mean, I think the biggest takeaway is, other than that, the Jays are playing really well, is that Sam Hauser is for real. Any early takeaways, things that you've been thinking about?
I'm pretty happy that Joe Mazzulla has been kind of evolving his game to incorporate things, not just like timeouts, but more creative uses of the rotation, giving guys like Sam Hauser, who we will talk about, a real chance. That was not really something we saw Udoka or Brad Stevens do very much. You could argue they don't really have too much of a choice, but I mean, they do, and they could do what Ime Udoka did last year and really lean on a core group of 7, 8, 9 at most, you know, players. And the result so far for trusting these younger players, even Grant to a degree, with a bigger role, I think has been largely positive and something that I hope they're really taking notes on, because you have to play the young guys if they're going to be worth keeping around. And if they're not worth keeping around, you got to move on. So I'm really happy with what I've been seeing from this team so far.
Yeah, it's interesting. You and I have talked about Pritchard and whether or not he's going to crack into the rotation. And he played a little bit in that Pistons game, but that's because Brogdon had some hamstring tightness. He's going to miss this Nuggets game. But I don't think anything we're worried about. There's probably one or too many players on this roster, a few too many. So it'll be interesting how Mazzulla figures that out, because you got to keep guys fresh to keep them engaged and rhythm. But you also want to make sure your top dogs are eating. I think the biggest takeaway for me is that the top dogs for the Celtics are really dang good. Jaylen Brown had like a bad half, and Jason Tatum, I don't think he has had a bad half. He had a bad fourth quarter against the Cavs once, but like otherwise these dudes have been rolling.
I will push back. He's had several bad games, but he, in terms of at least efficiency from shooting, and he's found other ways to impact the game, which is really the lead that we're bearing here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is like, Tatum is now, it's not like extra when he, you know, racks up five assists or something. It's like, I think that's increasingly the expectation. He's just big and tall enough that he's going to grab a bunch of rebounds too. And
to the line.
Yeah, get to the line. Jaylen Brown had one game where he had seven turnovers, but by and large, I think he's held onto the ball a little bit better. They're both playing, politics and fan voting aside, they're both playing like all-stars. And I would hazard they're both playing like all NBA players, although it's early. But this team, I think we know, and we'll beat this drum a lot, this team's going to go as far as their best players take them, despite, you know, a foundation and a rotation and Spurs East and all of that. Like, it really matters that Brown and Tatum are playing like some of the best players in the world. And, you know, Tatum is, he's doing that thing where he just like shoots over people from the 3-point line. He doesn't even like make space. He just shoots it and it's fabulous. But he also is initiating a lot of offense, either off the first pass once the ball gets over half court or just bring the ball up himself. And his gravity on offense is really interesting. I mean, comparing him and Brogdon as two people who are setting people up, Brogdon does a lot of work and, you know, penetrates and uses his speed to get himself open and then get other people open. I think Tatum just gets so much respect from opposing defenders that he can just make passes like, you know, standing 20 feet from the basket. It's really fascinating. So I don't know. There's a lot to really like about this Celtics team so far. Obviously, there's a lot of basketball yet to be played. I guess other news updates, and then we will hit the lab portion of the programming. Rob Williams seems to be progressing nicely. Justin, can you give us your best update there?
Well, he has, from the man himself, been dunking, been running, playing a little on court with other players, and he's within the 8 to 12 week range. That would be about a week from now when he would get to the 8-week range. It's probably going to be a little bit longer than that, but from the sounds of things, from other reports suggesting that the reason they gave the 12-week time frame was so that way if there was a setback, which they're evidently, knock on wood, has not been one yet, then probably sometime about 2 to 3 weeks from now would be my guess.
Mm-hmm.
And even that would be pretty quick compared to what we were originally thinking he might be returning for. So all around very, very, very positive news in terms of one of the Celtics' best players.
Yeah, I was thinking in my head, at least New Year's, I'm fine if it takes that long at this point. Make sure that he's 100% healthy.
Yeah, they've done well without him.
Yeah, they're perfectly fine anyways. It did occur to me, so some people have noticed that Luke Kornet, even if he's 15 feet from closing someone out, he'll just jump straight up, and he's telling people that it disrupts the sight lines, it's effective. Luke Kornet being the fifth tallest NBA player and tallest American player. I'd love to see all the Celtics players do that, Rob included. I think it just the
offense would be maybe hilarious. Sure. Yeah, once.
I told Alex I'm going to try it in our men's league. Okay, a little bit other news. Steve Pagliuca, how do you say it?
Pagliuca.
Pagliuca. God, it's like I don't even have a tongue. He is a co-owner of Boston Celtics. Steve is. And he's been tied to the sale of the Liverpool Football Club, really speculatively. He does own a controlling stake in an Italian team, tried to buy Chelsea last year, so it's a reasonable guess, something to keep an eye on. Certainly, if he does get involved, the suggestion is that the ownership of the Celtics have deep enough pockets that they could pay the luxury tax. Luke Cornett had a child. Good job out of you. And we also learned that Nate Robinson, Celtics alum, was dealing with kidney failure. We got a positive update from Jason Terry, which is good to hear. So best of luck to you, Nate. Don't want to talk about Udoka, quite frankly. But the reason I don't want to is because the Nets didn't hire him, which means probably there is another round of news cycle vis-a-vis, is he going to come back? Are they going to let him go? Something's going to happen. We're going to have to talk about it again.
We can leave it at that for now. Just that shocker person who was suspended for an entire year after leading the team to the promised land within two wins of a title is not going to get hired.
Yeah. Well, do your due diligence, Nets ownership. Anyways, let's pause the action to talk about our friends over at betonline.ag. And on the other side of that ad break, we will hop into the Celtics lab and talk to Sean Devaney of heavy.com. BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting for football and basketball this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at betonline.ag. It's always your continued source for sports wagering information, and BetOnline features live betting, free contests, live scores, and anything you might need for almost any game imaginable. They're the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, and golf games and events. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just make sure to use our promo code CLNS50 to receive that reward. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, let's hop into what we call the lab portion of the programming, and we're going to welcome in Sean Devaney of heavy.com. Sean, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Sean, you and the folks at Heavy have done a really nice job of helping us make sense of the trade landscape and the early goings of the season. Boston has a DPE, a TPE, and all sorts of other acronyms to play with. So we'll get to what might be in store for Boston. And before that, we're going to get into just like the landscape for possible trades overall. But first, just looking at the NBA, like what are some of your favorite storylines or biggest questions you have?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got some disasters brewing. That's always fun. You know, when you're in the media, everything that's happened in Brooklyn, going back to the summer, of course, Kevin Durant demanding the trade, coming back off that, Steve Nash getting fired, the stuff with Kyrie. You know, where is that all going to go? I think that's probably the number one question right now. And that's sort of, to an extent, blocked out some of the other major issues that have been out there. The Lakers, of course, are probably number one. What a mess that's become. The Warriors have not played particularly well. Nope. The defending champs. So that's been another story that's sort of been overshadowed, I think, by the what's happened in L.A. and what's happened in Brooklyn. And then you get the positives. You know, where did Utah come from? Who saw this coming? Certainly not Danny Ainge, of all people. Nope. And Portland's been very, very good as well. So, yeah, you know, I mean, there's been those couple of bright lights. But for the most part, the big stories have been, you know, the big, bad negatives that have been out there in especially in Brooklyn and Los Angeles.
Yeah, which is a shame. We'll cut to it. There's some teams that are playing really well, and it's entertaining to boot. I want to get into a two-part question, I guess two and a half. So I want to ask you about Victor Wembanyama. First, I want just your thoughts on Wembanyama. Second, there's a lot of teams that I think we pegged as, you know, unabashed tankers, quite frankly, teams like the Jazz or San Antonio or Indiana that are playing pretty well. So I want to ask you to weigh in on what's going on with those teams. But before any of that, Justin wants to call this tankathon Brickin' for Vic. And I want to call this tankathon no winning or winning nada for Wembanyama. Do you have a favorite moniker for this tank job?
Oh, man, that's I like both of them. I must say, I'm sorry, Justin, though, but if you can get Wembanyama into the catchphrase, I think you got to go with that. So I'm going for winning Nada for Wembanyama.
It is more clear. I'll give you that.
We'll call it a tie. So yeah, Sean, is Wembanyama the real deal? And do you think that these teams that are winning games in the early goings are privately not so happy about that?
You know, I think certainly Utah, no question, they came in expecting to wind up in that chase. Of all the teams that we're talking about, they're probably the one that is actually going to wind up a decent team, probably around 35 wins. You know, I don't see mm-hmm. them maintaining certainly the pace that they're on, but you could see them winning 38, 39 games, something in that range. And that's probably going to take them out of the running. That really does hurt them. But you know, everybody else, I think Indiana, while they've played well and they're a fun team to watch with Halliburton, I think Benedict Mathurin has just been fantastic. Jalen Smith, good to see him get his career back. I think in the end they'll be back in the running. Certainly San Antonio, I believe they've lost five in a row or something like that. So you know, they're going to be back in that as well. But no question that the guy's a real deal. I think he's averaging 21-9 over in France right now. There was a lot of concern or a lot of eyebrows raised, certainly for me, when he left his team. He changed teams this summer and left Tony Parker's team, when I was kind of like, well, why wouldn't you want to play for Tony Parker's team? Well, it turns out the reason, when you talk to some people, there's a coach, Vincent Collette, who is just really well known for taking young players and really developing them and getting the best out of their skills. And I think that's what we're seeing now with just how much smoother his game is. He's been the best young player in France, voted for that the last 2 years. And I think you've seen his game really take another step up. And I think that has a lot to do with the coach. That's why he changed the teams. I think you're seeing some of the payoff now.
Oh, fascinating. I mean, the payoff is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't know, that maybe it is media hype, but then you look at the raw footage and dang, I mean, for a kid that age and that size, it's just, I don't think we've seen anything like it.
Yeah. And I mean, the numbers are there. So it's not just hype. I mean, like I said, the eye test is there. The numbers are there, you know, 3 blocks a game. He's got the, those defensive instincts. Still not a great shooter, but you know, certainly an improved shooter. I think you can say that. Really just as exciting a prospect at 7'3" with a 7'9" wingspan. I always get a little concerned, you know, when a guy that big, because you worry about the feet, you know, especially going back to Phil Walton, but, you know, Yao Ming, Ilgauskas, Chet Holmgren now, there's been Ralph Sampson. There's been plenty of examples of guys who are that big, who just have trouble. Their feet can't handle the pounding that you take in the NBA, but you know, that's a worry for another day.
I think the coach you were mentioning, Collette, supposedly took a look at him in action and was like, make sure no one ever tells him to put on weight, because that's the thing that's keeping him from getting hurt.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because he's not doing the pounding that Yao Ming, for instance, or Bill Walton certainly did.
Well, interesting. All right. Well, we'll put a pin on that. That's really a conversation for this spring, but possibly a conversation for the next 2 decades, depending on how things go. So Sean, again, another kind of like two-parter, we got teams that might want to sell pieces off sooner rather than later, vis-a-vis a nice tank job, winning Nada for Wembanyama. We also have teams that probably need to make a move sooner rather than later. Cough, cough, the Lakers. What sense do you have about like where we're at with the trade market, and do you think things are going to whip into shape soon, or do you think teams are going to be patient?
Well, you know, I think there's going to be some patience. I think there's a couple things to watch. I think, you know, I mentioned Brooklyn and they played better lately. I think they've won 4 out of their last 6, as we're speaking now. The defense that was so terrible in the first couple of games has improved. Part of that is Kyrie Irving hasn't been playing.
I was wondering how to say that. Yeah.
that certainly is going to help your defensive numbers right there. But, you know, if they can get Kyrie back in and work him back in and get, they don't want to give up on this. But there's going to come a point where they're going to have to say, maybe it's time to give up on this. And that could be certainly by Christmas or so. And then you get into, okay, January 15th, you've got guys who are going to be available, DeAndre Ayton, for instance, and now some of the deals that you couldn't have get done in the summer because of the way the contracts were, you know, now maybe you can get those done. So I think Brooklyn is probably the big thing to watch, and whether they decide, okay, let's take another crack at really trading Kevin Durant this time. I wonder what the Warriors are going to do as well. You know, I think that they could have a real strong impact on this if they decide that, you know, this dream, and it might be a pipe dream of, you know, transitioning from their current big three to a Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, James Wiseman big three. If they realize, hey, that's not going to really work, we've got to take advantage of what we've got with Stephen Clay and perhaps Draymond. They've got to figure that out too, and that could have a really big impact as well. So, you know, I think those are the big things that could take a decent trade deadline and turn it into a huge trade deadline. Other than that, I don't expect a huge trade deadline, and we'll have to see where that goes. But those are the two teams. I mean, you could say Anthony Davis. I don't think the Lakers make a move on Anthony Davis, at least until next summer. So I think those are the two teams that I kind of have my eye on and probably going to define what this trade deadline becomes.
I feel like the Lakers really should tear down everything but Anthony Davis and LeBron. The Warriors, I think, are going through what the Celtics went through when they were trying to kind of ride two timelines and it wasn't working. I think it's really just exactly the same thing. They have two different sets of interests, two different focuses. They have to pick one, and one of them is a lot more obvious in this case than it was for the Celtics.
Yeah. I mean, it's Steph Curry. What more do you want him to do to show you that he still has a championship window? You still have that with him. With the way he's played, I don't think they would trade Andrew Wiggins. I don't think they would trade even Jordan Poole at 23 years old. But the three young guys, I think Moody, they'd probably like to keep more than any of the others. I think they want to keep Wiseman sort of out of stubbornness to say, we didn't make a mistake and not picking LaMelo Ball. That they might come to that conclusion. I know the owner is really committed to this idea of transition. At some point, somebody's going to have to come to him, if it indeed it's the case, and say, you know, this is, we got to take advantage of what we've got here.
Sure. So let's get to the Celtics in just a moment. But before we leave the rest of the league in the rear view, you said that the quiet part loud, a boring trade deadline is the thing that NBA fans want the least. I suspect you're probably right, given what the summer looks like. Are there any teams in like the middle class, upper middle class, whether it's Cleveland and Atlanta or Dallas and New Orleans, that you think would upend that otherwise quiet trade deadline? Also, yeah, it's 12 games in. Let's keep it.
Right, exactly right. Yeah. But that makes it easy for us to say it now because there's no, we've got plenty of time. And nobody's going to remember that we said it now. Anyway, so no, but I think Phoenix really could. I think that they're a team that Chris Paul has not played well to start the year. 37 years old, he's showing his age, and they might be sort of thinking, hey, you know, let's go out and if there's somebody available, Kevin Durant, for example, let's give him DeAndre Ayton if that's what it's going to take. So I think Phoenix is a team that could do that. Denver. They've got a lot of assets, and they are a very good, deep team. I think there's a lot of injury concerns there, obviously. Everybody's healthy at this point, but, you don't know if that's going to last. So I think Denver's one that could potentially – I think one of the problems that a lot of teams have is you're close to the tax line and you don't want to go over, and therefore you're not – so, a team like Chicago, Miami – even Portland, right now, I think they're it's crazy. They're like $36,000 under the luxury tax at this point. Atlanta is very close. All those teams are less than $2 million under the tax, and they don't want to go over unless there's something crazy that's going to put them into championship mode, and they're just, that's not going to happen. So a lot of the teams, even Cleveland is in that boat. Minnesota is about $2.5 million. Within the tax. So they're not going to want to take on a lot of extra money and have to explain to ownership, you know, we're doing this because we're going to win a championship, and then you get knocked out in the first or second round, and the owner is going to come back to you and say, what happened to the championship? You said we were going to win. Now I'm paying the luxury tax. So that's a problem that I think a lot of, and that's one reason I think it's not going to be, you know, an overwhelming trade deadline.
Yeah, we talked about this last year with the Celtics, whether or not they would go into the tax or not. And a point that I raised was, it's one thing for us to say, let's spend a billionaire's money. It's another thing for, you know, a general manager to spend their boss's money.
Yes.
And certainly if the repeater tax, you know, if you're expecting 2 or 3 years from now that you are going to go into the tax a year early to win a few more playoff games, does get expensive and complicated. But
it limits your flexibility as well. You know, you go into the repeater tax and now there's even more restrictions on what you can do in the summer.
Sure. All right. Let's talk about Boston.
Sure.
What type of player do you anticipate Boston would target in the trade market?
You know, I think if they could have what they really want, I think they would like to have another wing. I don't think they think Justin Jackson is the guy. Mm-hmm. You know, and look, they've been playing, you know, 8 deep, 9 deep at this point without Robert Williams. So there's no real pressure on them to go out. You know, if Rob comes back and he's 100%, you know, then you're talking about a 9-10 man rotation, and most teams would be plenty happy with that. But yeah, I think they'd like another wing. You know, certainly if somebody, knock on wood, were to undergo an injury, then you'd want to have somebody capable there. And I don't think they think Jackson's it. I think they feel better about their big man situation. Even though there's, you know, it's not like anybody's a real standout. I think Fournette has been good enough. And you know, if they have to go to Blake Griffin, I think they're okay with that. Or Noah Vonley. I'd like to see them give Kevin Gealy a little bit of run just to see.
Likewise.
Just to see. I mean, and I've talked to people with the Clippers who said, you know, the only reason he didn't play for us is because we had Zubac and then we went small a lot. And then we had Hartenstein last year. So, I mean, that was really the only reason he didn't get a chance with the Clippers. I think with the Celtics, you know, it's only 13 games in, so there's time for that. But I'd like to see him, you know, maybe get a shot as well. So I think they're okay with their big man situation. I think that's the one they're going to wait till Cornette's guarantee date. And it's sometime in January. I think it's January 10th or 15th, somewhere in there. And that's when they can decide on Cornette. If they cut him, then you go out and you use the TPE to bring in a replacement. I don't think they feel like they need to do that now. I think they'd rather, if they're going to make a trade now, it's going to be for a wing. If they're going to do something long term, it's probably going to be a big man.
Yeah, I have a feeling that if they do go for a big, it's going to have to be somebody who is both young and fits the system pretty well. Particularly someone who can maybe play the four a little bit, depending on how things go with Al. I don't think it's quite as safe as some people seem to think it is that he's going to necessarily take a team-friendly deal, considering we've already been down this road before, and he did not. And, you know, there's no reason why he should. If he's playing well enough to earn the money, people are going to give it to him.
Yeah, and there's going to be teams that would be willing to do that. I mean, look, if I was the Celtics in the perfect world, and I don't know why Charlotte doesn't value P.J. Washington, but I think P.J. Washington would be a great fit. He can play both positions. He's young. You're going to have to pay him. You know, he's up for the restricted free agent after this year. They didn't really have any serious talks with him about a contract extension this past summer, which
really?
You know, is head scratching when you think about it, because you know, because he's been a pretty good young player since he's been in the league. And if they decide to tear it up, now it's going to cost you. You could fit him into one of the TPEs. It's going to probably cost you 2 first rounders. And this is a team that's already, you know, given away a significant number of first rounders over the last couple of years. So, you know, do you want to do that? But I think he'd be the kind of player who, yeah, I'm okay with that. you know, I'll take a proven guy who's right in the age range of Tatum and Brown, and going to, you know, grow and progress with those guys.
Contract structure too.
Yeah, exactly right. It just makes sense. So if that's something like that were realistic, if Charlotte does try to tear it down and go for Wembanyama, then yeah, I mean, he to me would be the ideal. That might be a reach though.
Well, their general manager, or excuse me, their owner is the problem, I think, there, because as far as I know, he looks at tanking as an anathema to everything he is, which is not so great for a small market team.
Well, yeah, and that's also been a small market team that has been the worst team in the league. I think the worst team in the history of the league 1 year. So, you know, it's not ideal. I don't think he wants to tank. You're right. At the same time, he's been owner long enough. He's been general manager at Washington long enough to start to figure out, you would think, that at some point it makes sense to lose some games now to win later. At some point, you've got to get that message. And
it's a different game. Maybe this,
yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, or at least we'll win a few more games now. Yeah. I mean, the Pacers have admirably never really tanked, but I think they've earned that a little bit. So, Sean, correct me if I'm wrong. You're saying that PJ would be a good fit, but you're not reporting that there's any talks there.
No. Sure. You know, right. And I think teams did ask this past summer, and Charlotte wasn't interested in making a trade. As things kind of devolve in Charlotte with everything that they've had going on, you know, that's something that could come back. I think obviously Terry Rozier's contract, Gordon Hayward's contract, that's probably the first priorities for them. PJ Washington makes about I think it's $5.8 million right now. So you know, that's not dumping. PJ Washington's not number one on their list, but it's something that if the offer was good enough, I think they'd have to consider it, especially if things keep trending the way they are in Charlotte.
Do you have a sense how proactive or not Boston has been, you know, picking up the phone and dialing early on?
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the things about using TPEs that I think sometimes when you read what fans write to you and all that stuff is they don't get that just because you can fit somebody into the slot doesn't mean the other team is going to say, okay, you want that player? Go ahead. He fits into your slot. you still have to give them something, you know?
Yeah.
And so the Celtics have done, you know, from people I've talked to around the league, have done some feeling out, nosing around of okay, what would it take to get, you know, if it's a couple second rounders, or is it a first rounder? You know, what is it going to cost us? You know, we'll take the guy basically for nothing, but what else do we have to give you? And that's the thing that they're trying to find out, that they are being proactive in terms of that. Doesn't mean they're necessarily going to make a deal, but they want to know what's in place for, you know, when they get to January. Okay, who wants what, and what is the right, you know, on the sliding scale of assets we have to give up and talent we're getting back, where's the right fit? I think they want to know where that is and be ready for that by the time January comes.
Sure. Okay. I got a few more for you, if you don't mind. Who in Boston, kind of piggybacking on that sentiment, like who in the Boston roster do you think has either a lot of value on the market, or there's interest in, whether it's Grant Williams or Peyton Pritchard or something like that? Who do you think in the Boston rotation other teams might covet?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think teams are very interested in Peyton Pritchard. I think there'd be certainly there's a team in Utah who would welcome him. You know, I think you know, Danny and Will Hardy both would like to see him get to Utah somehow. So he's probably it. And you know, with the where his contract is at about $2 million, you know, in terms of matching deals, it becomes really tough. The way you'd have to structure it to use a TPE, and yeah, there's different ways you could do it, but it's tough to get anything really of value if that's all you're giving up. But you know, beyond that, I mean, look, teams would like to talk with the Celtics about Marcus Smart, but they're not going to have those conversations. Even Grant Williams, you know, from what I've been told, they're not just because they didn't come to a number. The Celtics still think they're going to re-sign him next year, and Williams thinks he's probably going to stay in Boston next year. Obviously, he's going to go out and see what he can get. Celtics can match it, and probably will. So, you know, I think that. When it comes to using the assets, I think the TPEs are the most likely scenario. I don't think we'll see, you know, Derek White or anybody like that on the move. Maybe Peyton Pritchard, depending on what they get in return.
What about Danilo Gallinari? I know it would be a very cold-hearted move, but with championship aspirations, do you think they, quote-unquote, do the right thing and keep him around, or do you think they're going to look to try to do something with that cap space that he's occupying?
You know, all right, so he's got about $6.5 million worth of cap space, and you could package him with Peyton Pritchard at whatever it is, $2 million. You can get up around, you know, with the way you can go 25% above, so you could go to, you know, whatever, to 10.5, 11 million. Is there going to be somebody worth it? Because you're going to take a hit, and you know, teams, players, other agents, you know, I mean, they still remember the whole thing with Isaiah Thomas. You know, the Celtics still have that reputation, even though it's a new front office. I think Brad doesn't want to come in and give the Celtics that reputation, you know, kind of carry on that and certainly trading Gallinari would do that. So, you know, if there was somebody who's worth it, I think they'd have to go ahead and consider it. I don't think anybody in that price range, I don't think you do it for Mason Plumlee. You know, I don't think you do that. So, I mean, I think that, I think in the end they keep Gallinari and there's a chance he might play. I'd be surprised if that actually happens, but you know, there's a chance he might play in the playoffs. So, I think that in the end they hold steady with what they've got there.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, as someone who loves the trade machine, humanizing it is important. And like, I've run into Gallinari at Celtics games. He was just at Marcus Smart's bowling charity event. And, like, he's very much in the fold, even if, you know, he's been injured since the beginning of September. So easier said than done with that trade machine.
And you know, look, if they need a big guy for the playoffs, it could be him. You know, I mean, he can play some center. It's not ideal. I don't think Ime Udoka would have played him at center. I think Joe Mazzulla would. I think Joe Mazzulla would give that a try, you know. So, you know, if there's a chance that he can be back, you know, whenever it is, and obviously he's got a complicated history with this injury going back to Denver and things that he went through when he was there. You know, it's going to be tough for him to come back. But if there's a chance, I think that they've got to, you know, hold out that hope and not be so icy hearted, Cruella de Vil of the NBA, the way that their reputation currently stands.
I really like Blake Griffin. The fans really like Blake Griffin. A healthy Gallinari would be an upgrade over Blake Griffin. Sean, what do you like? What do you not like about this Celtics team? 30 seconds or less as we close this up. Early goings, what do you like?
I love what I've seen from Marcus Smart. I mean, you know, the last few games especially, you know, and the turnovers. I mean, he's just not turning the way he had one. 5 turnover game. I think it's the second game of the year. He's not had more than 2 turnovers in any other game. He's playing much smarter. Still not a great shooter. I mean, that's we got to get used to that and just accept it. It is what it is. But you know, I think right now, you know, he's been, of course, you love Tatum and Brown and everything that they've done. But you know, he's been just the way that he's played, especially the last couple of weeks or so. That's really been eye opening.
3 10 assist games for the first time in his career. Very very impressive.
Yeah.
Any early causes for concern?
You know, I mean, I think the defense, you know, and I'm not the first person to say that. I mean, the numbers are obvious. They played better defensively and in the last few games. And you think that's going to improve. Can they maintain the level of offense that they're at? That's going to be a big question. I mean, they're knocking down 39% of the threes. That's going to be tough to keep that going. You know, one thing that I know you're asking for bad things, but one more thing that I do like is that they're getting more points in transition. They're getting 3 more points per game in transition than they did last year. 3 more points per game at the free throw line. So those are easy points. They're getting 6 more points per game in these easy ways than they did last year. So I think there is some sustainability to what they're doing on the offensive end, even if they don't maintain what they're doing in terms of the 3-point percentage.
All right. Sean Devaney of HotHeavy.com. I hope I said that right. We'll get you out of here on this. I'm going to drop this in your lap, so I'll stall as best I can. I want you to give me your best early season hot take, and I'll go first just to buy some time.
All right.
I've seen enough. I think this Cavs team is for real. Not the hottest of hot takes, but I'll turn the heat up a little. I'll say they're going to the conference finals. The defense is scary, and they can always default to Donovan Mitchell when the offense lags. A work in progress, a few moves to make perhaps, but my hot take early on is that the Cavs are not a nice story, but are indeed a powerhouse in the East. So,
interesting.
Sean Devaney of Heavy.com, I hope I stalled long enough. Do you have a hot take for us?
Yeah, I think the Pelicans could be in the conference final. You know, I think that they are that good. The record's not great. I think they're one game over 500, whatever it is. If they're healthy, they are a pretty deep team. They've got a bench that comes in and is just really intense and really puts a lot of pressure on you. Herb Jones is such a fun player to watch. You know, Zion can stay healthy, obviously. You know, this is a team that's that deep and good at both ends of the floor. I really like what Willie Green has done there. I think the Pelicans, they'd be sort of a dark horse team for the conference finals for me.
Fantastic. Justin, you want to
is that hot enough?
Yeah, it was hot enough. I like
that. Right, good. All right.
The West is crowded. That's a good one.
I'm going to stay in the West. The Jazz make the playoff. They might have to do it. They probably have to do it.
Play-in or playoffs?
Playoffs. They make the playoffs. They might have to do it through the play-in, probably. But I'm going to say that's my hot take. Pretty hot. Not blazing hot, but yeah.
That's spicy.
Hey, 2 weeks ago, that would have been the hottest of hot takes. All right. Sean Devaney of Heavy.com. Pleasure's all on this side of the screen. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Adios.